now.
I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. And we need him now.
I'll call it, sir.
For some reason, the cool bars in Hollywood have to be hard to find and have to have no sign.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
One for all those who love estate sales and secondhand stores as we check out an entertaining book called Selling Dead People's Things. Come across a rather interesting podcast I'll let you know about, our Look at the World Swank Gig Guide, Lounge Life Magazine, and of course, Dear Coop coming your way. Right now, Wayne Powers and Lush Life of the Cocktail Nation.
I used to visit all the very gay places, those come-what-may places, where one relaxes on the axis of the wheel of life to get the feel of life from jazz and cocktails. The girls I knew had sad and sullen gray faces with distant gay traces that used to be there. You could see where they'd been washed away by too many through the day. 12 o'clock tales. Then you came along with your siren song to tempt me to madness. I thought for a while that your poignant smile was tinged with a sadness of a great love for me. Yes, I was wrong. Again, I was wrong. Life is lonely again, and only last year everything seemed so sure. Now life is awful again. A trough full of hearts would only be a bore. A week in Paris will ease the bite a bit. My only care is to smile in spite of it. I'll forget you, I will, while yet you are still burning inside my brain. Romance is mush, stifling those who strive. I'll live a lush life in some small dive, and there I'll be while I rot with the rest of those whose lives are lonely.
Thank you.
yet you I will, while yet you are still burning inside my brain. Romance is mush, stifling those who strive. I'll live a lush life in some small dive, and there I'll be while I rot with the rest of those whose lives are lonely too.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Thanks to Ultraswank.net.
Her gaze swept over me like a slow days. It's too warm to fight a slow hot wind. There in the shade, like a cool drink waiting, she sat with slow fire in her eyes, just waiting. Someday it's too warm to fight a slow hot wind. We'll be right back.
Donation with Maurice. Slow Hot Wind. Lounge leader Coop Cooper. Website cocktailnation.net.
The Cocktail Nation.
Dwayne Scott certainly joins me, selling dead people's things inexplicably. True tales, vintage files, and objects of questionable estates. When I saw this come up, it came up on Facebook, actually, the cover, which the cover is intriguing, I must say. I love that.
I was very fortunate in that. That's someone I stumbled upon who's an Etsy seller. People are familiar with Etsy. Beat Up Creations, and it was actually on a plate.
Really?
The image was on a plate. On a plate. And I contacted the artist, and I said, we need to talk.
It's a young, looks like a young married couple, and they've got blood all over them, and they've got dead eyes, and it's a rather haunting photo. It looks like something out of a horror movie or something.
Well, and the book has its paranormal parts. People have been, the review just came out the other day in the UK that called it darkly humorous.
So
I love that.
So tell me, what is the book about?
The book is a bit of a hybrid a memoir. So it's both how I got started in the business at the very, very bottom, low-end picker, thrifter.
Yeah.
And then taking people into the States and taking them along on house calls.
Mm.
I was fortunate enough, in 2013, I wrote one of these stories, was published in the New York Times, and it was really well received, and I was just flooded with emails from people from all over the place. And I thought, I think I'm onto something here. That people, it's not always about, you know, wanting to know the appraisals and the value of things. We all get hung up on money.
Mm.
Where, in fact, these objects and their owners can often be very fascinating. And I realized, my gosh, I've been doing this for 30 years. I have all these stories, and people wanted to hear them.
Yeah.
5 years later, here's the book.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I've been along to a few deceased estates in the past, and it's a strange thing. As a collector myself, you know, you're very interested in these objects, but I think when you walk into somebody's house, as opposed to finding them in a thrift shop or something like that, there's a real connection that these objects were, you know, used and touched by somebody, and they were of value. They might have a family history associated with them. It could be anything, and that's the funny thing. Things have a story, don't they?
Exactly. And yeah, these things could very well be, let's use the word, loved.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, if you go to an estate sale, a tag sale, there's always different expressions for this. Mm. But you actually become a bit of a detective.
Yeah.
As you're going through someone's life.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like a big puzzle, and you start putting it together, and sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. Maybe there's somebody there to confirm it. That's the sweet spot for me.
Yeah.
Because these objects often tell stories, and it could be the smallest thing can say the most amazing impression, be the most relevant thing about that person's life.
Yeah, it's fascinating when you think about it. If you just look at the things in your eyesight, for example. I mean, I'm looking at a shelf that's in front of me, and there's books on collecting, there's books on spy movies, and then I've got a big collection of lounge music CDs and records, and then you're going to see a microphone sitting here. I mean, you'd put the story together straight away. Okay, this guy, he must do a podcast, and he's into vintage things. It tells a story. And I think the interesting thing is when you see things as part of a collection, part of a home, it tells more of a story than when they're just simply by themselves, separated from that group. I guess it probably puts the story together a whole lot better when they're together where they're supposed to be.
Absolutely. And I'd even venture to guess, you know, if I should be so fortunate to see your apartment. And it's able, here's someone who's obviously very stylish, you know, like these 50s, 60s brushed cotton sports coats. So certainly this was someone who was fashionable, and yes, and then you see the music and you say, well, gee, he was into this type of music, and you look at his books, and it's so much about, you know, what and it doesn't really take long to start forming a picture of what this person was like. If they were well-read, if they were fashionable, if they were interested in life, or kind of the contrary, were they a hermit? Did no one, did they never let anybody in?
Yeah.
Nobody's been in this place for 20 years. That becomes evident rather quickly as well.
Dwayne, did you find sometimes when you go into some of these houses that is there always a degree of sadness, or is sometimes there a degree of happiness? What do you often see?
What's curious, and I've gotten this response from readers of the book the last couple of weeks, is that something can be sad and funny and curious all at the same time. And isn't that life?
Yeah.
If you think about it, I'm kind of come to the conclusion that this book, which is really about death, says so much about life, and which is why I use the word inexplicable in the title. Because sometimes you just get to things, you're saying, I don't have the answer to that. I don't understand why that happened, why this is. That's the inexplicable part of life. And it's there in the objects.
Tell me one of the stories from the book that you find particularly interesting that really shows off its character.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this, and there's actually being a sequel that we're working on, and I think you might find this intriguing. Envision kind of like this, an Austin Powers type apartment, but set in like 1980. Okay, 1980, that's the motif. So we're on the 20th floor of this mid-century high-rise, and it's all glass and a penthouse view for days. It's a large apartment, like 2,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And you enter, and to the right, there's one bedroom on the far side, and there's another to the left. But in this apartment, the bedroom walls have been removed. So in the distance, on one side, you see this large round bed on a large platform, and the other bedroom has been replaced with a huge round jacuzzi tub with a mirror above it. Again, very Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Clearly someone has spent a small fortune remodeling this apartment. You know, what is this about? Now, here's where it gets fun. So all the furniture in the apartment is made of clear Lucite. So it's Lucite tables, Lucite chairs, even the sofa. The sofa pit, it's all Lucite. It has cushions, so it makes it a little more comfortable, but the entire apartment is Lucite. And the coffee table is custom designed, and it's electronic. And by that I mean you push a button, and it slowly rises to become a dining room table.
Wow.
And I found the original receipt for it when I bought it, when the person who did the apartment, and they spent $3,500 on that in 1982. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, and in the middle of the room is this huge floor-to-ceiling column. And I just couldn't tell if it's to support the ceiling. What is this? Again, no. Again, you push a button, and it opens up, and it reveals a bar. So the entire apartment was conceived as like one great seduction.
That's incredible.
In essence, it's like a very well-designed love pad.
Yeah.
But here's what gets interesting, because who built this? Who designed this? Well, it turns out it was created by two separate individuals. It was a straight woman and a gay man, and they were both partners in business in this very successful interior design firm. And now they each had their own separate homes in the suburbs, separate lives, but this place was their inner city apartment. And each would use it on alternate weekends.
Right.
Now, I pieced all this together from the person who was handling the estate and the realtor, but who gave me the most information was the doorman. All the comings and goings over the years. And of course, I bought every piece of Lucite furniture. It was fantastic. Sold it all. And people just love this push-button operation of things, these custom, you know, I sold the bar. It was the first thing to go. So kind of my point is that, you know, not every estate is like your grandmother's doilies or your uncle's spittoon collection. That one just blew me away.
That is incredible. It's an amazing concept for a book, and I knew what it was about immediately from looking at the cover. I was like, I've got a pretty good idea. I need Dwayne to tell me about this book, but I've got a pretty good idea just from the cover of the book what this is about, being a collector myself. And it's an amazing concept. I remember years ago I bought a collection from an antique dealership in Tamworth, which is in country New South Wales here in Australia. So it's a large country town, and often you find some of the best stuff in country towns. At the best prices too. And I bought a couch which I cannot describe to anybody probably accurately. It's leopard skin. I still got it. It's leopard skin. And I often ask collectors actually if they can really identify this. Maybe you can. But basically, it's like a bit like a, maybe you could call it a day bed perhaps. And it has a small backing, small back. So it's short, which means when you sit next to somebody, you sit on this couch, you've really got to sit right next to them. The guy at the store described it, he called it the Marilyn Monroe sofa. I don't know whether he just made that up or not. But it's a very odd piece of furniture. I've never seen another one like it, and I have a feeling it's probably worth a bit of money, but because it is kind of rare.
Yeah.
When I bought that, at the same time, there was with it was a cowskin rug. Right next to it was a 50s lamp. Shade with a nice little table connected to it. And there was a television set, a 1965 Pi television set. And I bought all of it. I went back several years later and I discovered that the TV set actually sat on a rack, like a metal rack. And I discovered that from going to a museum, of all places, and they had this particular TV on display. And so anyway, I'm back at this same place where I bought all this stuff, and I'm wandering around down the back section of it, and I find the rack that's meant to be with this TV set. And I thought, what is the chance of another TV set like this coming into this building? Highly remote, highly remote. It's got to be the one for the TV set. So it was like $20 and I snapped it up straight away and it stayed with the TV set forever, you know.
I truly believe there are no coincidences.
Yeah, I've always thought the TV set and its rack were meant to be together.
Together, yes. Even if they came in years apart.
Yeah.
You know, right. It's I was the thing about with like people want to break up like sets of chairs or things, and I said if they came in together, they're leaving together.
Yeah,
I'm not messing with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're supposed to be together.
Do you ever when you go into any of these estate sales, do you ever feel an eerie sense when you go into these places, like somebody's watching, going, "Hang on, that's my stuff."
Sometimes I'd say, you know, there's a chapter in the book about we did an early clean out of a huge hospital that had been shuttered, and that was disturbing. That absolutely, and there were some odd things that happened, and it's a very peculiar chapter in there. So I would say, like institutions, often schools, I felt that. The post office we once did some work in. No, so not so much homes. I'm not really intuitive. But there have been issues with just certain objects. And again, there's a chapter in the book about a desk that I sold a couple of times because people kept bringing it back.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
That is incredible.
And it got to be like, you know, the next person who buys it, of course you could bring it back. And then the last woman who bought it called me up and I thought, oh, here she's bringing it back. she said she wanted to know about it. And I said, let me guess. I said, do the drawers kind of, you come into the rooms and some of the drawers are open? She said, yeah, that's what it's doing.
Really?
And I said, well, it's, I said, it's the glides on the desk. It's not your floor isn't uneven. I said, that's just what it does. And I said, that's a problem. Bring it back. And she goes, no. My husband and I keep arguing over this. And it's what we're seeing, and of course, then I'm in the position saying, well, you know, I didn't guarantee it was taunted. Mm. and she was funny because she says, well, I'm trying not to return something. You know, I love it so much, but I don't want to return it.
Have you ever
it's a very strange conversation.
Have you ever discovered anything interesting inside pieces of furniture or books or anything like that?
Well, that actually, that's a good segue for that one, because on the bottom of all the drawers were these strange, writing. There's really no other way to say it. It was like burnt into the bottom. There was a story, and it was a small partner's desk. You're familiar with what that is. So partners could sit on either side of the desk. The drawers could be wide from one side to the other. And depending how you laid it out, it always had this kind of old English writing, this cursive writing. It's like hieroglyphics. And so it kind of wasn't surprised that that would be the problem with that desk. Yeah. It was extremely well done, but you didn't see it when all the drawers were in there because it was all in the bottom, on the underside of every drawer.
That's incredible. The book is out right now, Selling Dead People's Things by Duane Scott Cerny. Thanks so much for joining us on the show. I had a feeling that my listeners would love to hear about this.
Coop, this has been a blast.
Certainly grab your
Thank
book.
Thank you because, so much.
It's fascinating stuff. Great to talk to you. And, of course, you can grab the book. I would imagine it is available on all platforms and everywhere.
It's 3 days after it came out, it was the number one book on Amazon.
Wow.
Antiques and Collectibles.
Well,
I know.
Congratulations.
Talk about being spooked.
Congratulations. Fantastic. Selling Dead People's Things by Duane Scott Cerny.
L'Ange Lotario DJ. Coco Pa.
Cocktail Nation.
Listen, Dickie Bird, my character is a card shark with a taste for booze and broads. That might be too much of a stretch.
He's a playboy.
So what? So are you. What does that have to do with anything?
But I ain't running for president.
Jack Daniels still your drink?
Jack Daniels from Mr. Sinatra.
There's some things money can't buy. For everything else, there's the Cocktail Nation.
You know we love you madly. Okay. So we're going to leave you with a little kiss. And a little Wes.
Saturday night, 9 o'clock, radio's the only light. I hear my song and it pulls me through. Come on strong, tell me what I gotta do. I gotta get up, everybody gonna move their feet.
Get out,
everybody gonna leave their seat. You gotta lose your mind in Detroit, Rock City.
Get up,
everybody gonna move their feet.
Get out,
everybody gonna leave their seat. Can't wait. 10 o'clock, I know I gotta hit the road. First I drink, then I smoke. Start up the car, try to make the midnight show. Go, man, go!
Get up!
Everybody gonna move their feet.
Get out!
Everybody gonna leave their seat.
Cocktail Nation with Nutty 4 on Kiss from the new album Live from the Purple Pit. The interview that I did with Sunny Moon from Nutty just a couple of weeks ago. Before that, Hugo Montenegro and a martini built for two. Do check out Lounge Life magazine, your free retro magazine. Got links via the website cocktailnation.net for you to check out and enjoy this free magazine. It's a flipboard magazine and really simple to download the app and check it out. This week in the magazine, Nancy Sinatra Sr., the childhood sweetheart of Frank Sinatra, became the first of his four wives and mother of his three children, has passed away at the age of 101. Married in New Jersey in February of 1939, just as Frank's singing career was about to take off. During the marriage's early years, the Sinatras lived in a modest apartment in Jersey City where their two oldest children were born. And for a time, Nancy was actually employed as a secretary. After he became a pop music sensation in the 1940s, they moved to Los Angeles, where he would become a movie star, raconteur, and notorious womanizer. That latter accomplishment led Nancy to leave him after an affair with actress Ava Gardner became public knowledge. Also the story of Tab Hunter in there, who just passed away, the former on-screen heartthrob, gay icon. He's passed away at the age of 86 in Santa Barbara. The all-American good looks, the wavy blonde hair, the piercing blue eyes, and the toothy smile. Hunter rose to the top ranks of Hollywood's leading men in the 50s and early 60s. But at the height of his popularity, he was dogged by rumours that he was gay, a potentially career-ending rumour that culturally, during that conservative era, was a bit of a career killer. At one point, he was actually outed by the gossip rag Confidential. And there's a very, very interesting documentary that's out on Netflix that you might like to check out, all about Tab Hunter. He was also a singer. Here he is, But Beautiful, on the Cocktail Nation.
Love is funny, or it's sad, or it's quiet, or it's mad. It's a good thing, or it's bad, but beautiful. Beautiful to take the chance, and if you fall, you fall. And I'm thinking I wouldn't mind at all. Love is tearful, or it's gay. It's a problem, or it's play. It's a heartache either way, but beautiful. And I'm thinking, if you were mine, I'd never let you go. And that would be but beautiful, I know. If you were mine, I'd never let you go. And that would be but beautiful.
Central Sydney. A man. A microphone. A dimly lit apartment. And a smoking jacket. The Cocktail Nation.
Cocktail Nation with Jet Set Sweden, A Man and a Woman. Also played Daniel Pemberton from the Ocean's 8 soundtrack. Hated the movie, loved the soundtrack. And that song is called The Actual Heist.
On de Cocktail Nation, it is Dirk Hopper.
You can write to me anytime via the email, thecocktailnation@gmail.com. Get in touch via the social media pages. You can send me some audio as well. I'll play that for you. This one from Wes Britton, a joke this week. Dear Coop, I've got a joke for you. I went to see a movie, and two seats down from me was a man with a dog. The dog was very interested in the film. During the exciting parts, the dog panted with his tongue hanging out. During the sad parts, he whined sadly. During the funny parts, he made a doggy laughing sound. And when the movie was over, I said to the man, "That's really incredible. Your dog really enjoyed the movie." And the man replied, "Yeah, I'm surprised, because he absolutely hated the book." I do one, as well as my syndicated radio show. And I do love discovering new podcasts. One that I've just discovered the other day called RFK Tapes, all about the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. Interesting story. Do check it out. It's up on the iTunes page. It's called RFK Tapes. Let's take a look at the What a Swank gig guide now for pastimealbumclocks.com. Surf Guitar Convention is coming up August 4, featuring the Blue Hawaiians, the Raymond Scott Festival in LA. That's coming up on the 8th of September. Tiki Day, September the 30th at Disneyland. For these gigs and lots more, click on the Cocktail Nation Willis Wink gig guide banner on the website, cocktailnation.net. Here's Bobby Darin and Charade.
When we played our charade, we were like children posing, playing at games, acting out names, guessing the parts we played. Oh, what a hit we made. We came on next to closing, best on the bill, lovers until love left the masquerade. Fate seemed to pull the strings. I turned and you were gone. While from the darkened wings the music box played on, sad little serenade, song of my heart's composing. I hear it still, I always will, best on the bill, charade. Fate seemed to pull the strings. I turned and you were gone. While from the darkened wings the music box played on and on. Sad little serenade, song of my heart's composing. I hear it still, guess I always will, best on the bill, charade.
Hello, everyone. I'm from your telephone company. When dialing, notice that I brought my finger around until it firmly touched the finger stop. And now I remove my finger.
The Cocktail Nation.
So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. You met someone and now you know how it feels. Goody, goody. You gave him your heart too, just as I gave mine to you. And he broke it in little pieces. Now how do you do? Hey, you're lying awake just singing the blues all night. Goody, goody. You think that love's a barrel of dynamite. Hooray and hallelujah, you had it coming to you. Goody, goody for him. Goody, goody for me. And I hope you're satisfied, you rascal, you. You gave him your heart too, just as I gave mine to you. And he broke it in little pieces. Yeah, how do you do? So you're lying awake just singing the blues all night. Goody, goody. You think that love's a barrel of dynamite. Hooray and hallelujah, you had it coming to ya. Goody, goody for him. Goody, goody for me. And I hope you're satisfied, you rascal, you. I hope you're satisfied, 'cause you got yours. You got yours!
Cocktail Nation with Mark Copeland and Goody Goody. It's Coop Cooper, lounge leader. And next week on the show, Kramer is back talking classic movies with us. Going to leave you with David Carbonara and Betty's Ride. Stay up.